Good morning. It's Sunday morning and you are listening to The Beacon.
Well, it's Lady. Oh, good morning. How are you?
How are you? Did I catch you off guard there?
Just
are
a little bit.
Are you surprised that
I'm
we're on the radio?
I'm still asleep. No.
Bright and early, 7 a.m. on a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
I'm Lainey Kleeman.
And I'm Brian Hawkins.
How's your? Yes, you are. How's your weekend been?
My week has been okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You know what happened to me this week?
What's that?
I got stung by a bee.
Oh,
it felt like I was 12 years old.
How did that happen?
What grown-up gets stung by a bee?
Well, was it inside?
No,
or was it
outside? I was eating a snow cone, so I guess that explains why a grown-up would get stung by a bee.
Well, I've got one better for you.
Oh, what? Do share.
I was eating hummus.
Oh, yes.
Having a good time with
and
my,
who wouldn't?
My sweet potato chips, and an ant crawled in my hummus. So we've both had bug problems.
Oh my gosh! And that just ruins the hummus at that point.
Yes,
you can't like continue.
So what
eating
I did was
I
took the cover and I swept the bug into the hummus, closed it, and threw it away.
And
so now he can have it all.
Yeah, that's very generous of you.
Well,
yeah, I mean you are a giver, aren't you? Because I did not give the bee my snow cone. Although I will tell you what, I'm a friend of bees. I love bees. I don't freak out about them. I think that they are integral to our ecosystem. So as soon as it stung me, I saw it fly away. And like my first thought was, oh, that poor bee's going to die. Like that was
does
just,
that happen?
It does with honeybees, but with wasps and yellow jackets, it doesn't because they keep their stinger. But honeybees, when they sting you, they lose their stinger and then they die. So I felt so bad. Like, I mean, first of all, he was kind of a jerk for stinging me because I really wasn't. I mean, I was just like, oh, hi, little bee. Like,
well, they
just
must not know that if they, because they wouldn't sting you if they knew they'd die afterwards.
I think consciously they probably don't have that awareness that, you know what, if I sting this person, I'm going to die. So I need to pick my battles here. But yeah, they do. I did some research on it afterwards. Like, oh, poor bee. But you know what? You shouldn't have stung me. That wasn't very nice of you. Like, you could have shared my snow cone. I would have been happy to share with the bee. But he didn't. He wanted it all to himself, apparently.
What flavor was it?
It was, oh, so good. It was key lime, coconut, and vanilla. And there's a place in Palatine, and I'm just going to plug it because I love it. It's called My Favorite Place, and it's just snow cones, and it's like authentic Hawaiian snow cones. And if you want, you can put ice cream at the bottom of them, and then the ice cream like absorbs all the syrup so that when you're done with the shaved ice, then you just have like delicious ice cream at them. It's really, really good. So if you're in Palatine or Lake Zurich, they have one in Lake Zurich, My Favorite Place. Check it out. They're open through the winter.
Yeah.
I know. It's crazy. It was good, though. It was worth it.
Well, you know, this is a good month for sweets because it's October and everything. But I've been meaning to ask, how are your little ones doing?
They're good.
Little ones getting bigger ones.
I know. It's too much. My daughter wants, like, I don't even know what she wants to be for Halloween. My son wants to be Tamatoa from Moana, the
for
movie
Halloween?
Moana. Yeah. I'm like, good for you, dude. Like, super creative. And I don't know. My son definitely has, like, a more unique individualized like way of thinking and doing things. Yeah.
What has he been reading? Simatoa?
Tamatoa. It's from the movie Moana. Oh. So, I mean, it's,
One of those cartoons.
It is. Oh, but I've been looking for costumes. It's a very like obscure character. So there's no costumes out there. So I'm actually going to probably have to put on like my creative hat and try and put something together, which I can't make any promises about how that's going to turn out. But
well, you know, if you in fact do get a really nice costume, I have the perfect place for you to take it.
What? Where? Let's talk about that.
Well, it's called a Spooktacular.
Ooh, that was
I've
scary.
Been practicing my what's that guy's Your name? Boris Karloff
yes.
imitation, but
it was pretty good.
It's coming.
Well,
but it's,
you're your
it's,
own individual.
It's the Chicago Lighthouse North.
In Glenview,
222 West. Let me do that again.
Try again.
222 Waukegan Road in Glenview. They're having a spooktacular. And all ages are invited. It's a costume parade at 2:30. It starts at 1 o'clock till 3. And suggested donation is $5. But you can come and have a lot of fun.
What day?
And that would be October 28th.
So it start the party starts at 1 and the costume parade's at 2:30.
That's right.
All right.
And it ends at 3. But Ms. Wittenberg, who is the senior director of the Lighthouse, is asking that you RSVP no later than October 20th.
Okay.
And you can do that by calling 847-510-2060, or you can email her, melissa.wittenberg@chicagolighthouse.org.
That sounds like a very fun and safe way for the kiddos to celebrate Halloween. And it's so unfortunate that we have to consider safety on Halloween now, you know.
Did you ever go trick-or-treating when you were?
I did. Yeah. And, you know, and it was, you know, we got the warning, like, don't eat candy that's been open. Like, well, somebody might have poisoned it. But beyond that, like, we were free to run about the streets until all hours of the night. Now it's like, I don't know, trick-or-treating is from like 3 to 7 p.m. and that's it. And, you know, as a grumpy old grown-up, I'm like, well, thank God my door's not being knocked on after 7 p.m. But as a kid, you're like, you want to be out and about and having fun. And there's
looking
just
good. And
right, exactly.
Eating candy.
Totally.
All of those good things. Well, it is the month for that.
It sure is.
Oh, and by the way, you know, I wanted to congratulate someone. I don't know if you're familiar with Tommy Shimoda. He lives over in my neck of the woods on the south side.
I don't think so.
Tommy Shimoda is the first Special Olympian who's been inducted into the Chicagoland Sports Hall of Fame for speed skating.
I feel like, did I talk to you about this?
Did you?
We talk about this? Because I feel like I had a conversation with somebody
someone.
About him.
Yeah.
Yeah, do share. Elaborate, please.
Well, he won the race in Schlemadning, Austria in March. I know I'm pronouncing
that
wrong.
Is that a phonetic pronunciation?
It's the best I could do.
Fair enough.
But he's retiring since he's won the race, but he was inducted into the Chicagoland Sports Hall of Fame, the first Special Olympian to do that. So congratulations to him.
Very exciting. Congratulations.
You know, he's nonverbal. I want to get him on the show.
That's what we did talk about this last week.
Oh,
because I remember we discussed, you know, maybe needing, you know, whether he communicates via sign language or, you know, whether he's got a you know, speaker board for him. Who knows?
Yeah.
But it would be great to interview him.
Yeah,
what a phenomenal accomplishment.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's some good news for this week.
I like it.
Let's move on to what's going to be on the show.
Okay. Well, we've got Michael W. Okay, you're going to have to help me with that one. See? We need to do phonetic spelling.
Sandy did the interview, and she had a little trouble with the name, but he's the new Illinois State Treasurer, Frerichs. And
Frerichs.
As he said, think of Frerichaka.
Frerichaka. Nice. All right, Frerichs.
Right.
Easy enough to remember once I've heard it. Okay, so he's going to be Sandy's talked to him about ePay, the Illinois Electronic Bill Pay Service, and ABLE, which is an acronym for Achieving a Better Life Experience Act, and how it helps those with disabilities and how to qualify.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And then Brett talks with Mark Gillard. Now, Brett went to San Francisco, was that this year? I think it was. Or was it last year?
But
anyway,
he
went to San Francisco and he got a guide dog. So
is that where he got Poet?
Yes.
Poet is Brett's guide dog. I don't know if Brett's talked about him on the air, but
oh, are you kidding?
Okay. Constantly. Endlessly.
Can't stop him, no.
We love Poet.
But
we
Poet's
do.
Good.
Yeah.
But he's going to talk about how service dog owners can handle folks who want to pet their service dogs when the service dogs are working.
Yeah.
And people, if you are one of those folks, listen carefully in between the lines for tips on how you should act when you are around service dogs.
Yeah, it is important. They are doing a job, and if they are distracted, then they can, you know,
right,
lead their person out into trouble. I mean, it can get dangerous. So it is important to abide and respect by, you know, the kind of the guidelines and the boundaries that are set when a guide dog is working. So this is, I think, important information because those dogs are so judgy too. You just want to squeeze their little face and kiss them, but it's not always appropriate, as I've learned.
You can when they're not working.
Right. But. And I think with permission too,
right,
you know, but so good. Well, Brett, we'll talk to Mark about that and learn about those boundaries.
Yep. Brett and Sandy are here. We've got Luke's Laboratory. We go deep into the recesses to talk about assistive technology and Customer of the Week.
Wow. New feature. Very exciting.
A feature in a feature.
Boy, we are groundbreaking on this show, aren't we?
And then, of course,
Let us turn up the beat, and I'll be here with some football treats.
Oh.
Yes, it's football season. So get ready. Buckle up.
Can't wait.
Here we go.
All right. So we'll have all of that. On the other side of this break, you're listening to The Beacon.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Being a veteran here, I think, has helped me. I could not see, because this is why I initially was brought here by a counselor from the VA, because like, they collaborate with each other and help us to get our vision better. When I first walked in here, I didn't know the life of a blind person. I actually didn't know. And when I came here, I walked through the door and I could see how people were so, you know, they act like they could see. And it was so inspirational to me. I cried like a kid when I first got it, because I was overwhelmed to see how people can deal with blindness, you know. And the Lighthouse really, really has helped me with a lot of things, because I've learned to be more knowledgeable about computers. And they have an exercise class that they teach us how to exercise. So every fourth Friday of the month, we have a luncheon where all the seniors meet. We sit there and talk about different events and different things. And my greatest passion right now is being on the radio, reading to the blind. That's my greatest passion. I really love that. Number one is to be able to give back to people that can't see, because I was overwhelmed. And I promise God within myself that I will do this until I cannot see again. This is my greatest passion in my life.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
I have the very distinct pleasure of talking with Illinois Treasurer Michael Frerix. Michael, did I pronounce that right?
Yeah, Mike Frerix.
Frerix, Mike Frerix. Well, Michael, thank you so much for being with us. You were here at the Lighthouse for a very, very special endeavor, both for the Lighthouse and the Illinois Treasury. We recently held a press conference, in fact, and I know you came around the Lighthouse to see our programs and services, because we initiated a contract with JetPay.
Mm-hmm.
This is a call center that will help manage the e-pay system in Illinois.
Yeah, so in the Illinois Treasurer's Office, we have a couple of different programs to help out local units of government, mm-hmm. counties, municipalities. They're called e-pay, which helps them to process electronic payments, credit cards, online payments, a variety of different things. And also Illinois funds. We help them invest their money and get a greater return so they can make more money for their unit of government. And so we recently went out with a new contract to hire a new provider for our e-pay services. And we were very excited to announce that that call center is going to be staffed here at the Lighthouse.
Oh, and it is... We heard in the press conference, you know, the Lighthouse, one of our, part of our mission is to provide employment to people who are blind or visually impaired, disabled, and veterans. And as I understand, the call center, it will employ people who are blind and visually impaired, correct?
That is correct. That's one thing we're really excited about here today, excited to announce that not only is this program going to help a lot of units of government maximize their revenue collection and maximize their interest they're earning, but we're also going to do an awful lot of good for people with blindness or visual impairment.
Now, tell us a little bit about ePay, how consumers benefit from it. I understand that people can pay their bills.
Yeah. So people can pay their bills. They can now do this online. It used to be if you got a bill or you got a ticket from the city, you'd have to get a stamp. You'd have to mail it in. But, you know, or maybe go in personally and deliver it. Well, we're in an age right now with computers. People don't want to do all that. They like the convenience of being able to pay at their desktop or pay on their cell phone. And so ePay helps facilitate that. So when you pay a parking ticket or a speeding ticket, when you're paying property taxes, when you're paying a fee that's owed to a unit of government, that in most cases, that's processed by the Illinois State Treasurer's Office.
And, you know, that's a very interesting point that caught my attention because I myself am totally blind and technology has really made a difference, you know, even in the way that I might pay bills. You know, before it used to be that I would have to have someone read the bill out to me, you know, someone I trust, and then have assistance with submitting it. But now that it's available online, you know, through ePay, that has made a huge difference.
Yeah, it is amazing how much progress we've made. The iPhone came out about 10 years ago.
10 years ago, yes.
1 decade ago. And now there's such computing power in your pocket, and you have all kinds of apps to help out people with blindness or a visual impairment. It's just really exciting, the things we can do. And when I came into the office, we said, you know, technology has changed. Processes have changed. We need to evolve, and we need to improve with them.
Absolutely. And, you know, in this case, I think what's unique about it is that it's a win-win situation. You know, people who are blind or visually impaired will become, have jobs. And, you know, with ePay, it's, the system is accessible. With both ePay and JetPay, it's, you know, accessible to customers who are blind or visually impaired.
Yeah, I can't say excited about that. We come in, we look for win-win situations. Some people in politics, they seem to come in and they want to win and they want their opponent to lose. They want all the credit. I find when you're willing to share the credit, you're able to accomplish an awful lot more. And by partnering with Lighthouse, we're going to have good customer service, but we're also going to help give people employment, people who traditionally have had high rates of unemployment.
Absolutely. And now a topic that we cover here on the Beacon is disabilities and veterans. And recently, about 2 years ago, former President Obama signed into law the ABLE Act, the Achieving a Better Life Experience Act. And I understand that Illinois is a participant of this program.
Oh, we are very excited by this. This was not an option when I was running for office, but after I got elected, this became an option, and we helped push this through the General Assembly. What we found, though, is this program, ABLE, operates an awful lot like a 529 college savings program, like Bright Start or Bright Directions in our office. However, when we went out to some of those vendors, some of the financial service industry who wanted to partner with us on college savings, they didn't want to partner with us on ABLE. I thought that was just wrong. And they said, well, the pool of people who can participate is much, much smaller than the pool for college savings plans. So rather than pointing a finger or casting blame, rather than throwing up our hands and walking away, we put our thinking caps on. And we said, what would happen if we were to work with other states? If Illinois, the fifth largest state in the country, is too small to make it happen, then surely other states have some problem. We found that they did, and we found that by working together, we put out one RFP with 10 states together. We got more interest than any other individual state did in our RFP, and we also were able to negotiate the lowest fees in the country. So now Illinois will have the best program in the country. So will Iowa. So will Minnesota, Indiana, Rhode Island, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Kansas, Montana, Arizona, Nevada, Alaska have all bound themselves together to be able to effectively negotiate the best program in the country.
That's wonderful. And, you know, we had Christopher Rodriguez from the National Disability Institute telling us about what the program is, the ABLE program, and how it will benefit many people with disabilities that receive Social Security or Medicaid or Medicare benefits.
Yeah, in order to qualify for those benefits, they are means tested. And that means they can't have more than $2,000 in assets. That means people can't own a home. They can't own a car. They can't have $2,001 in their checking account or they lose their benefits. If they save money through an ABLE account, they can save up to $100,000 without losing their benefits. This is going to make a tremendous difference in a lot of people's lives.
Absolutely. And how can people find out more about the ABLE program or any of the other services you offer?
Any Illinois State Treasurer's program can be found on our website at illinoistreasurer.gov. They can click on ABLE to find that or information about ePay.
Well, Michael, is there anything else you would like to share with our listeners?
Well, the only thing I would say is if they make it to our website and they can navigate through there, also look at iCash. This is our unclaimed property division. We're sitting on over $2 billion in properties that belong to the people of the state of Illinois. We'd love to get them back to people, so check and see if we have something that belongs to you. Fill out the forms, and we would like to send you a check.
Absolutely. It's always great to have that opportunity to claim back what you possibly lost.
Great. Well, thank you, Sandy, very much for having me here today.
Thank you.
I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about the successful partnership with Lighthouse in addition to our new program, Illinois Able.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Treasurer Michael Frerix. Is that correct?
Michael Frerix.
Frerix.
Just think Frerijaka.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for everything that the state treasury does for all of the Illinoisans.
Sandy, thank you. You have a great day.
You too.
Today, the unemployment rate for veterans is at an all-time high, and these brave men and women need our help. To meet this challenge, Paralyzed Veterans of America created Operation PAVE, an employment assistance program for any veteran at the Hines VA in Chicago. Through a partnership with Agility DGS, these services are provided free of charge. Hiring more veterans is great for business and great for our nation. To learn more, visit OperationPAVE.org, a public service message from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Welcome back, everyone. I am Sandy Murillo.
And I am Brett Shishkoff.
Well, Brett, we just heard the interesting interview with Treasurer Frerix. You know, you can tell he is committed to helping the Lighthouse and other organizations in Illinois help provide employment opportunities to people with vision loss or other disabilities. And, you know, fittingly enough, October is National Disability Employment Awareness Month. I don't know if you knew that, Brett.
I did not. But once again, that's a mouthful, and you rocked it like a rock star. So
you can tell I practiced all night, Brett.
Yep. You definitely, I think, sit in front of the mirror, even though you can't see yourself in the mirror.
Exactly.
But you're practicing just in case.
It gives me some, at least some motivation, at least imagining myself right in front of the mirror, you know. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but, you know, I try.
Yeah, definitely. I think for people with disabilities, it's definitely been a tough road to climb or tough mountain to climb to be able to get us into the workplace and to have employers take us seriously. I think sometimes they think, oh, it's going to be too much work to be able to get somebody acclimated who's blind or has a wheelchair, and what do I have to do to be able to accommodate them? I can just hire somebody else that can do the job without me having to work on that. But with ADA, you really can't do that. Like, the employers really seem to be turning that corner now. A lot more employers are more willing to at least interview with people with disabilities, but there's still a long road to go for us to make any headway, because it's still a small percentage. It's still under 40% people with disabilities having any type of job. So hopefully we'll start seeing that climbing. I think it will, because I do know that a lot of these companies seem to be realizing there's an untapped market of talent with people with disabilities.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, as more people become aware about the assistive technology and the different tools and techniques that, you know, people with disabilities can use, you know, I think that'll hopefully help, you know, change the attitudes, the misconceptions mm-hmm. that are out there about people with disabilities. Yeah. I think that essentially comes down to attitude.
Yeah, I think it definitely has bridged that gap. Technology really has made it where we can do almost anything that anyone else can do in a workplace. I don't know, maybe construction might be a little bit difficult going on top of a 100-story building and going across girders. That might be a little difficult for us. But for the most part, any type of office type job, we should be able to do without a problem. But yeah, we definitely have a lot of great tools to our disposal now. And one of my great tools that I have at my disposal is my buddy Poet, who's literally laying on my feet right now.
He's being extra quiet, well-behaved.
Yep, he hasn't fallen asleep yet. He does that sometimes when I'm talking too much. So he hasn't done that yet, so I must be engaging him. But I was able to speak with Mark Gillard from Guide Dogs for the Blind. We kind of went over some guide dog etiquette of how do you exactly handle a situation with a person like myself who has a guide dog. A lot of people tend to not realize that there's a certain way to handle situations with people with guide dogs, that they have to be working and not be distracted, and sometimes they can get distracted by somebody just coming up and petting them. So why don't we just get right into the segment with Mark Gillard from Guide Dogs for the Blind.
All right, let's do it.
I have Mark Gillard from Guide Dogs for the Blind, and he is the orientation and mobility, I went blank on the rest of your title. If you want to finish that for me, feel free, Mr. Gillard. Thank you for joining me, by the way.
Oh, thank you for having me, Brett. And yes, my title's a long one, so it's Orientation Mobility Services Manager.
Ah, yes. The service manager part is where I got hung up on. The main reason I got you actually to come on today was we kind of wanted to go over some guide dog etiquette. So someone who's walking down the street, or you see somebody on the bus with a guide dog, sometimes people don't know exactly how to handle that situation. That's why Mark is on the show today. Why don't you give us some tips and hints of, let's say, I'm walking down the street with my guide, Poet, and all of a sudden someone just comes up and starts petting my dog. How what's the situation? How should I handle that the best way possible?
Okay, so the first thing to realize, I suppose, is guide dogs are so revered and trusted by the public that mm-hmm. it is a reality of using a guide dog. There's nothing we can really do to avoid it. So having said that, we need to always be diplomatic about it. We're kind of walking advertisements, aren't we, for guide dog mobility when we use our dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing that, though, I know it can be annoying, and sometimes it can be plain even distracting or dangerous if the dog is interfered with. So I think the first thing is breaking this down to if you are moving with the dog through space or if you are stationary. So if you are moving and someone kind of reaches across on the other side of the sidewalk and pets your dog, and you know, your dog stops or wiggles towards them or pulls offline,
mm-hmm.
I think the first thing is look after your safety, number one, and halt your dog and let it sort of regain concentration, and you too, of course.
Mm-hmm.
If the person has continued on and hasn't bothered to stop, then, you know, I think that's as much as you can do. No point sort of yelling after them or obviously going after them. It's what's done is done, and you just get on with things as best you can. Redirect your dog by voice or with the leash and move forward.
Mm-hmm.
However, if the person stops and then wants to engage with you, I think it's important, again, stop your dog, place it in a sit position, and then it's important to say to them, hey, listen, I'm on my way here, and my dog got distracted. I know you want to say hello, but it's kind of nice if you were able to sort of talk to me first and let me know that you'd like to pet my dog or say hello,
mm-hmm.
so I can then manage the situation. Now, that's putting it very diplomatically, and hopefully the person will learn from that, and then, you know, if necessary, they can talk with you and they've learned from the moment. If the person reacts negatively to that polite request, then, you know, you've tried to explain it, and I would then just do my best to say, okay, have a good day, and then Juno forward, and then move out of the area.
Okay. What are some other situations maybe a guide dog would come in contact with and their owner? Do you have a few that the, you know, you guys at Guide Dogs for the Blind run into mostly? Maybe we can go over a few of those.
Sure. So, again, in terms of etiquette, it can range from the example, you know, you've just stated, and I meant to sort of finish that off too. If you're sort of waiting at a bus stop or a street corner and your dog is stationary, then those ones are sort of a lot more common, I think, that people, you know, think, oh, it's so tempting to reach down and pet the dog.
Mm-hmm.
In those cases, I think you have the ability to say, please don't touch him. We're working. We're about to cross the street, and it can distract him from his work task. And you know, if you'd like to engage, it's always best to sort of ask the guide dog handler. So just, you know, to say no, but in a polite way, educate, and, you know, then get your mind back on the job and that of your dog to complete the street crossing or whatever it's going to be
mm-hmm.
next. So that's the finish, sort of finishing off that first question.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then things can get a little more serious, I think, in terms of interference or distraction, which I'll talk a little bit about. I mean, I have heard from some graduates that, you know, if they're crossing the street, then you might have someone in the public feeling that they can help them by maybe grabbing their arm, or even worst case scenario, grabbing the harness and actually, you know, thinking they're going to steer the person across the street.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those things, it's very, very important that, you know, we initiate some control of the situation there and if necessary, quite firmly, saying to the person, excuse me, please don't do that, and use a firmer tone of voice. That will really upset my dog. It can be dangerous. Please don't do that. I'm okay. Because obviously if they steer you offline, that can create enormous problems with orientation,
mm-hmm.
and obviously cause the dog to react and, you know, maybe display anxiety and at the very least affect its concentration. So those ones are more serious, obviously. And then the other ones we hear about involve that situation, which I know every guide dog user is aware of, and those thinking of a guide dog unfortunately need to be aware of, and that's someone interfering with their dog. So, for example, they have a leashed dog, they're walking, and they allow their dog to go over and interfere with the guide dog, either in a working situation or when the dog's, you know, your guide dog is laying down under a coffee table or something like that. Those ones, I think, can be the most difficult because it can range from sort of a friendly social contact on the part of the other dog to, as we all know and have heard, can range to maybe something of harassment, even progressing to a dog attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one that I actually have run into a few times is like walking through a restaurant and then people see my dog coming through and they put their hands out to try and pet the dog while we're walking through the restaurant, or they're handing them out some type of food. I've had that once or twice, and that is not something that people should do because, well, they see food, and they're naturally a dog or an animal, and they think that it's for them. And so that's something that I've run into myself once or twice in a couple different places.
Yes, that's right, Brad. And they're difficult when you have food situations, be it a restaurant or a cafeteria. And going back to sort of my introduction, people really revere these dogs. They're trusted, well-loved mm-hmm. members of the community, and they're so approachable, they don't understand that giving food can create enormous behavioral and physical problems. So what I suggest there is walking through a restaurant where you've got tables and chairs at close quarters, and it's easy for someone to slip the dog a bit of food, it's to have the dog as compact and as close to you as possible. Mm-hmm. So there are a couple of options. If you're with somebody and it's a very tight space, and I respect people's right to independence here, so I'm just trying to give some options, you can drop the handle and go human guide and mm-hmm. have a very short leash so you know exactly where the dog's head is and makes it more difficult for someone to sort of get into your personal space.
Mm-hmm.
You can also utilize the gentle leader head collar, which some guide dog schools use. GDB certainly gives everyone one of those,
mm-hmm.
where, once again, you can monitor the dog's head, where it is. If you feel the dog sort of lurching towards the left, for example, and it doesn't feel right, then, you know, you can gently move the leash back to your right to keep the dog's head near your left leg. And so, you know, these are ones where you're healing the dog. You can mm-hmm. use a cane if you're by yourself and you want to keep the dog close in that situation. If you're with someone and you want to work your dog out of the restaurant, you can kind of use them as your protector and monitor. So, for example, they can be right behind your right shoulder in a very close kind of a following position
mm-hmm.
and let you know, okay, there's a guy coming up who looks as though he's going to reach across or he's got a bit of food, you know, on your left. So you can kind of take control of that situation, maybe stop, drop the handle, or take evasive action in some way, go around another table, whatever you need to do to control that situation.
Okay, very good. So why don't you kind of give us a little bit rundown of what you do for guide dogs for the blind?
Okay, sure. So I'm responsible for overseeing orientation mobility programs that help folks qualify for a guide dog. Or we have many current GDB graduates already using guide dogs who may need to refresh or improve their orientation mobility to qualify for a successor guide dog.
Okay.
So So, yeah, so the program that I oversee in conjunction with partner organizations. So our first partner organization is the San Francisco Lighthouse, where we actually have a program that their O&M specialists provide instruction to people we refer there to enhance those skills that I mentioned. And it's conducted over a six-day period. So it's quite an intense, we call it the O&M Immersion Program.
Okay.
So that's kind of my primary role here.
So then when somebody applies for a guide dog, they exactly might not be up to snuff, I guess you could say, with their own skills, so orientation and mobility skills. For our listeners who don't know what O&M is, so then you would be able to send them to this program at the San Francisco Lighthouse, is what you were saying?
Yes. So if, for example, someone is interested in obtaining a guide dog from GDB, and we conduct a phone consultation with them in our admissions department, and it turns out that, yes, they don't yet qualify for a guide dog because they don't have those O&M skills that are so important to direct a dog,
mm-hmm.
then we can definitely help them out by referring them into this program. And sometimes the reason for that lack of O&M is definitely not tied to motivation, Brad. It's tied to a lack of services in the person's home area.
Right.
So what we want to do with guide dogs is kind of make it possible for people to qualify and help them out if there's just no or very little services in their home area.
Okay, got it. So if anybody had any like questions or they wanted to learn a little bit more about guide dogs in general, could they go to your guys' website?
Absolutely, they can. The website address is a pretty easy one to remember. It's www.guidedogs.com.
And I know you guys also take calls from us as graduates or from people in general if they have concerns about a guide dog. Do you have that number available as well?
Certainly. We have a designated support center here at Guide Dogs, which has six people in there, two professional instructors, two GDB graduates, and two experts in vet care. And you're welcome to call that number to go through to one of those people, and it's 800-295-4050.
Well, I believe that's all the time we have for today there, Mark. I want to thank you so much for coming on to the show and giving us some good pointers along the way. So hopefully, as we're out and about with our guide dogs, us who have them, I am one of them, hopefully we have quite a bit of better luck not having so many people jumping out in front of our guide dog and wanting to pet them. So I do appreciate you coming on once again. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for having me, Brett.
And that was Mark Gillard from Guide Dogs for the Blind. We will be right back with more Lighthouse Beacon.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Yeah, I have an undergrad from DePaul Computer Information Systems and a master's in Business Information Technology. And I know I have a disability, and it can be challenging trying to get a position. You know, they want to hire someone with a disability. So that was one of the challenges I had also, going to a job interview and people look at your strength because you have a disability. I've gotten frowned at. They'll say, we'll call you or we'll consider, but it never happened. The Lighthouse has provided me with employment. I've been here since 2013, November. I've grown. I transitioned from Illinois Tollway to UI Health. The Lighthouse is awesome. They really work with people with disability, visually impaired, and veterans. Get employment, you know, find employment, because the percentage of people with disability is unemployed is extremely high. People that have degrees and they still can't find a job. So the Lighthouse is very supportive in helping them find employment. One word, I say awesome.
Historically, Our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
All right, folks, we are back here on The Beacon, and you know what today is?
Sunday, October 8th.
9th?
No, today's the 8th.
Okay, well, we're back to not being able to count again. But anyway, my point is that whatever date it is, today is Thanksgiving Day in Canada.
Oh, is it?
Yes. Well, they celebrate second Monday of October since 1957.
Well, that's tomorrow.
Oh, okay. So you're right.
Today's Sunday the 8th, yeah.
It's a chance for people to give thanks. So I guess they pretty much do it the same way that we do, except that it's done a month earlier. And I kind of like
that. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, Thanksgiving is coming up next month, isn't it, for us? Wow. Well, happy Thanksgiving Day if you are a Canadian who happens to be listening to our show this morning.
That's right. So they probably already have their fixings and their food and everything set up. So, unfortunately, your football recipe for today may not help them.
Well, they're probably not throwing any last-minute recipes together, I would imagine.
Right. So I'll have to use it for another time, but I am interested.
All right, let's do this.
Ladies and gentlemen,
excited.
Lady Kleeman, let us turn up the beat.
Hi, everybody. All right, so I've discovered, you know, in my tenure of doing the healthy recipes and whatnot, that, you know, football fandom and health consciousness don't necessarily go hand in hand. But I, for one, love watching football and love not feeling guilty about the things that I eat. And I can't be an anomaly, right? Like, I'm sure that there's other people out there who sort of feel the same way. So in light of that, today's recipe is broccamole.
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 Sounds like broccoli and...
It's a guacamole... substitute. And it actually sounds really good. Like, I don't put recipes out there that I wouldn't try myself or don't think that I would love myself. So instead, you know, and guacamole in reasonable proportion is healthy for you. Like, avocados are one of the healthiest foods on the planet. You just can't eat like an entire bowl of it and expect to feel great. So in this case, we are substituting the guacamole for the broccamole. So to do that, you want to boil some chopped broccoli, 3 cups of chopped broccoli, and go ahead and chop up a jalapeno if you like it spicy, some green onions, a little olive oil, and then you can use, and this is your preference, this is where you get the cream base, you can either use cream cheese, or if you don't do dairy, you can do silken tofu, cashew cream, if you'd prefer sour cream, goat cheese, something creamy, like some sort of cream base. For vegans and vegetarians, you can use tofu or cashew cream. And then you've got a quarter teaspoon of chili powder, a little cilantro if you like it, salt, pepper, and then garlic powder to taste. So you're going to go ahead and boil that broccoli until it's very soft. You want to overcook it, like compared to what you're used to, and then drain it. And then, you know, if you have a food processor, transfer it to a food processor with all the remaining ingredients. Mix that baby up, and you have got broccamole. And you can use that instead of guacamole. And there's like 150 comments under this recipe. And every one of them is like, it's amazing. Never would have thought. So, you know, this is a nice guilt-free way to enjoy your football Sundays. And you can eat the whole bowl. It's like 200 calories in a whole bowl as opposed to a bowl of guacamole where you're probably looking at like 1,000 calories. Ooh. So guilt-free and delicious.
This is like healthy watching football, athletes in shape. And you're eating healthy.
Exactly. Oh, okay. See, and then you have a guilt-free Monday. So
guilt-free Monday. And
that
you feel
is
good.
That's my recipe for today's lettuce turn up the beet.
What utensils do you use to prepare your dishes? Do you have like a spiralizer and a Vitamix?
I use a Nutribullet, which I have found to be a Nutribullet is less than $100, so it's very cost efficient, and it purees everything. So it's typically marketed as like a smoothie maker, but I make everything in my NutriBullet. So if I'm, I think last week or the week before, I was talking about my lentil soup that exploded all over the place.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that was in my NutriBullet. Granted, that wasn't a great outcome, but it did the trick. It pureed it the way that I needed to puree it.
Well, you know where else you can get inexpensive items?
Where?
For the kitchen. That's in the Tools for Living store.
Oh, my gosh. That was a great segue. I love it.
Ooh, you're keeping track.
Huh? That's right.
Yes. And so we'll be talking about the Tools for Living store and also assistive technology, which Luke and I will be in the laboratory discussing all of that. Morning, Luke. How are you?
Good morning. I'm feeling invigorated after learning a new fact about blue planets today.
Oh. Well, that's good. You want to share that fact? No. It's just that they're, younger and hotter, is that correct?
Well, that's what you tell me, so you're the authority on this.
No, I feel guilty. If I'm wrong, blame me. But today, assistive technology, different CCTVs.
Yes, so I wanted to talk about this topic because obviously many people that we see want to purchase a CCTV and they're not sure which one to go for, and there's lots of different types to choose from. So I thought I'd talk about some of the different types and hopefully help people make a decision. So first of all, what is a CCTV? Well, a CCTV is another name for an electronic magnification device. And I'm specifically going to be talking about the desktop devices today, which are the larger devices. And people will use these to read. They will use them to write underneath. You can use them to do things like trimming your fingernails or painting your fingernails and all sorts of cool things like that. So they're extremely useful devices for people with a visual impairment. But there's a few different types to choose from. Now, first of all, I want to talk about high-definition cameras. Most of the new units now have high-definition cameras. Not all, but most. And the people who benefit the most from those are actually people who need less magnification, which sounds kind of weird. However, the high-definition cameras at the lower magnification levels look a lot sharper. And so for people who have things like glaucoma, where their central vision is still pretty good, but they just need more contrast enhancement and a little bit of magnification, the high-definition cameras are definitely recommended because they will be able to get it to a good level for them and apply different colors and be able to read much more easily. So there's a little tip for you there. So that's one thing you want to watch out for. Now, another thing is the specific type of CCTV. There's two main types. You've got your traditional type and you've got your camera and arm type. So first of all, with the traditional type, they have what's called an XY table. This is a moving tray that you can put your document onto as you read. And as you're reading, you have to move the document around underneath the camera. And the tray allows you to do this very smoothly. So it's a really nice, smooth reading experience. And so if you want something that you plan on, you know, reading underneath for a few hours at a time, it might be good to get one of those types of devices. Now, the camera and arm device actually has a movable camera and it does not have a tray. And so the camera is mounted directly on top of the screen on an arm, and the arm moves around like backward and forward and left and right, and the camera rotates itself as well. The nice thing about these is you can position the camera exactly where you want it, whether it be to the side or right in front of you, so you can get it nice and comfortable. And you can also rotate the camera toward you if you want to look at yourself to do your makeup or, you know, to check that you shave properly or anything like that. And you can also rotate it the other way into the distance if you want to look out the window or, you know, spy on your neighbors or whatever it might be there. So those can be really useful. They're great if you do hobbies, actually. Because you can point the camera like right toward your hands, you know, if you're doing work with your hands and things like that. And they also have a lot of room for writing underneath. And so if writing is one of your main goals, then that can be a really nice design. Now, both of those types of designs, you know, come with the high-definition cameras and also different screen sizes as well. So the largest screen size tends to be around 24 inches, and the smaller ones might start off around, you know, 17 or something like that. And the larger the screen, the more text you will fit on there. But surprisingly, it doesn't make a huge amount of difference, especially at the higher magnifications. And so don't think that you have to get the biggest machine possible. I mean, it's better just to get one which fits in with the amount of room that you've got in your house and things like that. One more thing that I want to talk about is a newer category of CCTV, which is a smaller desktop that folds away. And you can get these with batteries built in as well. So they're portable, But they're still, you know, larger units considered desktops. And the great things about the great thing about these is that you don't have to leave them set up in one place. You can fold them away and move them from room to room and use them in different places. And so it gives you a bit of flexibility. Like if you want to read a recipe in the kitchen, you can take it to the kitchen and do that. And then you can go sit in your front room and read a book or whatever it might be. And so those have become more and more popular recently. So that's pretty much just a quick overview of some different CCTVs.
Now, is there one that most people who come in are gravitating towards?
Honestly, no. It's very dependent on the individual. So there's a lot of great machines out there, and it really depends on what they want. I should say that some of them actually talk to you as well. That's a fairly new thing. So you can actually you can read underneath them using magnification and colors and things, but you can also have them read to you. And so that's really cool. So there's something for everybody. It just depends on the individual and their preferences.
And speaking of individuals coming into the store, that leads us directly into
Customer of the Week.
Wow, you do that very well.
Thank you. I've been practicing at home. Yeah.
All right, who is it this week?
So this week, unfortunately, I don't have a name. It was kind of a random situation. I was in the store helping out with some things, and a gentleman walked in, and he wanted to know if anyone was available to sit down with him for a few minutes. So I sat down with him, and it turns out that this gentleman was from South Korea, and he was in America for 1 year. I think it was some kind of student exchange program, and he was actually living in Indiana, but he'd come to Chicago to check it out for a couple of days, and he wanted to sit down and take a look at what kind of, you know, American technologies there were, what's happening in America as compared to South Korea. So I sat down thinking, oh yeah, we've got some stuff to show you, this is going to be great. Turns out that he actually had some stuff to show me. Like, this guy had more technology than I even knew existed, and he was pulling out all sorts of things from Korea which I wasn't aware even existed. So I had a really good time meeting him. He was a great guy. He'd been going around the city like by himself using his smartphone and navigation apps and things like that, and yeah, it was just a lot of fun. So good times.
The unknown customer.
There you go.
If by chance he hears this, maybe he'll call in.
I really hope he does, yeah. That'd be great.
All right. And finally, on the road.
Yes. Yesterday we had a fantastic roadshow in Palos Hills. Met some really great people, and we all had a great time. So thank you to everybody who attended that show. And I know some of them said that they were going to be coming to some more shows, you know, before the end of the season. So I look forward to seeing them there. We've got another two coming up in the next couple of weeks. So October 11th, we have a show at Tradewinds, and that's at 3198 East 83rd Place, Merrillville, Indiana. And another one after that is October 24th at Mount Prospect Public Library, and that's 10 South Emerson Street, Mount Prospect, Illinois. And so hopefully people can come out to those and see some of the technologies we have, and you know, have a talk with us, and we look forward to meeting you.
Now, you usually take a hiatus at the end of the year. Does that start in November?
Yes, so I think our last shows are going to be in November, and then we usually start up again sometime around March. So obviously I will keep everybody updated as to when that's going to be.
Right, so folks, get them while they're hot, the road shows. You might want to attend one before the hiatus begins. I also wanted to ask about Lighthouse North. The Tools for Living store there. Who is it? Still the same person who folks can go up there and see about
There's technology? A few different people who kind of work in that store. However, we do have one specific lady who does technology, and her name is Anne Kelly, and she's fantastic. She's also a trainer at the Apple store. And so if you have questions on your, you know, Apple devices, then she's a great person to ask about that. And she will be there on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, I believe. And she can help you out. So make sure that you call them and make an appointment with Anne to, you know, so that you know she's going to be available, and she would be happy to show you new technologies or do training with you or whatever it is that you need.
All right. He's Luke Scriven. I'm Brian Hawkins. Luke's Laboratory. Out. This is The Beacon.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Being a veteran here, I think, has helped me. I could not see, because this is why I initially was brought here by a counselor from the VA, because like, they collaborate with each other.
and help us to get our vision better. When I first walked in here, I didn't know the life of a blind person. I actually didn't know. And when I came here, I walked through the door and I could see how people were so, you know, they act like they could see. And it was so inspirational to me. I cried like a kid when I first got it because I was overwhelmed to see how people can deal with blindness, you know. And the Lighthouse really, really has helped me with a lot of things because I've learned to be more knowledgeable about computers. And they have an exercise class that they teach us how to exercise. So every fourth Friday of the month, we have a luncheon where all the seniors meet. We sit there and talk about different events and different things. And my greatest passion right now is being on the radio, reading to the blind. That's my greatest passion. I really love that. Number one is to be able to give back to people that can't see, because I was overwhelmed. And I promise God within myself that I will do this until I cannot see again. This is my greatest passion in my life.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
Well, it's another show in the bag.
Yeah.
Is that what they say, or in the can?
They used to say in the can, but considering everything is done on computers now, right. What did you say? On the server?
On the server.
Right.
In my
server.
Delete folder. There's another one in my delete folder.
Did you know that Oprah Winfrey is on 60 Minutes now?
What? As a correspondent, or?
Yes. She's
really?
A correspondent. And a couple of weeks ago, she debuted. I didn't see it this past week, but she was wearing her thick horn-rimmed glasses, and she was holding court in front of a panel of individuals talking about President Trump and getting an idea of how they felt about how he's doing. I guess they felt that the ratings were such that they needed a jolt in the arm to get some press, because you really haven't heard about 60 Minutes a whole lot.
No, it's kind of gotten lost in the fray.
Yeah.
I guess Oprah Winfrey, she tends to pull ratings up. Like, whatever she touches turns to gold. So we want to say our thanks to our very good friend Janet Schlick of The Lighthouse, who believes in us and supports us and keeps us moving all of these years. And then also to...
To who?
Brett and Sandy. So many thanks to them, and of course, thanks to you. Many thanks and love to our very dear friend, Bill Jurek, who, we wouldn't be here without him. So that's it. Thank you for tuning in this week. Have a wonderful week, and we will see you soon.